listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, it's time yet again for you to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll experience crime busting with gangbusters and the case of the Quincy Killers. But first, on the lighter side, let's enjoy The Life of Riley. The Life of Riley was first heard on NBC in the summer of 1943. William Bendix was just about perfect as Riley. Riley was developed as the typical hard-working Joe, but not easily defeated. A leaking roof, problems at the plant, or even manifestations of kids' growing pains were enough to send Chester A. Riley into pandemonium. And through it all, wife Peg tried to remain level-headed and understanding, even though she sometimes lost her cool before the 30 minutes were up. In 1945, Riley moved to Saturday nights. It continued there until 1951. The Life of Riley was virtually unscathed by the arrival of television, but made the transition easily, with Bendix carrying on as ever after the initial programs had featured Jackie Gleason as Riley. Bendix died in 1964. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with The Life of Riley and An Expert in Marriage from September of 1946. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Mar, Jamis, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The amazing liquid dentifrice brings you The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Remember, friends, for beautiful smiles, it's T-E-E-L, Teal. And just for laughs, it's R-I-L-E-Y, Riley, in The Life of Riley. After 17 years of married life, Chester A. Riley considers himself an expert on the subject, and he's always ready to share his knowledge. The other night, for instance, Riley brought home a young man who works at the aircraft plant with Riley, and dinner was just about over.
Gosh, that was a wonderful dinner you cooked, Mrs. Riley. Really wonderful.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Morgan.
Mr. Riley, you're sure lucky to have a wife like you've got.
Well, she didn't do so bad either, Bill. I was a very gorgeous bachelor.
Oh, Riley.
Well, you're both very lucky to be so happily married.
Yeah, we sure are. Say, Bill, didn't you say once that you was engaged to some girl of the opposite sex?
Was is right. It's all off between me and Jenny.
Oh, what a shame. Well, what went wrong?
Well, you see, Jenny's a wonderful girl. Only she's very stubborn.
Oh, stubborn, huh? That's bad. Well, what was Jenny stubborn about?
Well, it's about her going on working after we get married.
And naturally, you want her to.
No, I don't.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you how I feel
about
it.
Does she have a good job?
That's just it. She makes more money than I do.
Well, I'll tell you, Bill, the thing is...
And the worst is, her boss is crazy about her.
Oh, you're not jealous.
Well, I think...
Who wouldn't be jealous? Who wants his wife working for a boss who's a wolf? How would you feel, Mr. Riley?
Well, if you ask... That was me you asked.
Yes, sir. I want your advice.
Well, Bill, you take my case. The day we got married, Peg quit her job. And what was the result?
We were both out of work.
Gosh, how did you live?
Well, I came through. I made a subhuman effort and got a job.
But it only paid $12 a week. We almost starved.
That's right. But I faced the situation with my face and did what every self-respecting husband would do. I kept looking and looking until I found Peg a job.
And she took it?
Well, sure, even though her boss was a wolf, too. But did I kick up a fuss? Not me. I played it smart, didn't I, Dumpling?
Well...
Yes, sir. Thanks to the way I handled the situation, after 17 years, I'm still married. And so is my wife. Peg, I'm going out and get some Cokes. While I'm going, you tell Bill how I handle things. It'll be a lesson to him.
Gee, I wish I had a head like Mr. Riley.
Young man, you don't know when you're well off. Riley's sweet, but would you like to hear the real story?
Yes, ma'am. Seems to have worked out all right.
Well, yes, it did. But it wasn't easy. You see, Riley had this job at Monahan's Furniture Factory, where I worked before we got married. And he made so little, we lived in one room lit by gas. We couldn't afford electricity.
Are you home?
Oh, yes, Chester. I'm right here.
But I can hardly see you. It's pitch dark in this room. Here's a kiss for my little bride. Peg, your lipstick tastes like varnish.
That's the bedpost you're kissing. I'm over here on the chair.
Oh, well, why don't you light the gas, Dumplin'?
Well, I didn't have a quarter for the meter.
Oh. Well, they say a dark room is great to rest your eyes. But tomorrow is payday, and then we'll get the gas back. Oh, it'll be great to see you again, darling.
Well, I miss seeing you too, Chester. You leave so early and get home so late.
Well, I'll give you a treat. I'll light a match and let you look at me.
Oh, don't be silly. I know what you look like.
Okay, Dumplin', if you ain't in the mood for love, let's eat.
Eat what, Chester? You know we never have enough left to get groceries by the end of the week.
Oh, sometimes I wish we'd never left Brooklyn to go west. Living is high here in Manhattan.
Chester. Chester. Why don't I take my old job back?
Ah, nothing doing. No wife of mine is slaving for old Monahan. What kind of a man do you take me for? I respect womanhood. I'd rather let you starve than have you support me.
But it was a good job, Chester. And Mr. Monahan liked me.
So did his son like you. That's Sidney. I don't trust him. He looks at you the way I used to look at you.
Sidney was always a gentleman.
Yeah, fine gentleman. Tried to marry you behind my back.
Oh, now stop it, Riley. Sidney's very nice.
Oh. Maybe you wish you'd married him instead of me. Then you could live in a classy apartment instead of a fourth-floor tenement like this, where every time the elevator train goes by, the motorman can see what you're doing.
Chester, don't let's argue tonight. Do you know what day this is?
Trying to stick me, huh? It's Friday. Our turn to use the bathtub in the basement.
It's our wedding anniversary, Chester. We've been married a whole year.
Wedding anniversary? Well, Dumplin', ain't that great? Why, this calls for a celebration. Come on, let's go to the Astor Roof. We'll have champagne, filet mignon, caviar, pork chops, and for dessert, I'll give you 1,000 kisses.
Oh, but Chester, we're broke.
Will you settle for the dessert?
Chester, that's Sidney Monahan's knock.
What's that four-flusher doing here? Keep quiet, maybe he'll go away. His father gives him music lessons, and that's all he can play.
Now, Chester, you be polite. Come in. Why, Sidney.
Well, 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 my little Peggy. Come here, let me take a good look at you under the hall light. Yep, the same beautiful Peggy Pie. Nothing has changed.
Her name has changed. Just remember that, Monahan.
Same old Riley. Come here and let me take a look at you in the light. You look better in the dark.
He's so funny.
Monahan, that wasn't a very polite thing to say.
Riley, don't be rude.
Oh, I don't mind him. I can't get over how you look, Peggy. Let's see. It was only a year ago today you married this lucky baboon.
Never mind the cracks about my luck.
Now, stop, Riley. Come on in, Sidney.
Lead the way, Peggy Pie. Hey, it's dark in here. Light the gas, Riley.
Yeah, the gas meter, a quarter. Well, can you beat that? I left my wallet home. I mean, will the meter take a 25-cent check?
Don't worry. Tonight the gas is on me. Where's the meter now? Oh, here. Say, I can't get this quarter in the slot.
That's my mouth, Monahan.
Here, you drop it in, Riley. Here's the quarter.
Thanks, Monahan.
Now light her up. Here's a match.
Thanks, Monahan. But just remember, I ain't taking any handouts. First thing tomorrow, I'm paying back this match.
Yeah, there. That's better. Now I'll tell you the nifty idea yours truly thunk up. I'm taking you old married folks out to dinner. All on me. An anniversary present.
Well, thanks, but we ain't hungry. Are you, Peg?
No, not a bit. I couldn't eat a thing, but I'll force myself for politeness' sake.
Okay, then let's go. You kids slip into your best duds. I'll wait for you downstairs in my new Essex.
Oh, come on, let's get dressed, Chester.
I ain't going.
Oh, but Chester...
I ain't going. If you want to go without me, go ahead.
Oh, I couldn't do that. Oh, please, dear, it's very nice of Sidney to remember our anniversary.
Sounds more like it's his anniversary. That's all I've been hearing around here. Sidney. If you think he's so wonderful, go with him. Go.
I think you're horrible.
Peg, Dumplin', please don't cry. Oh, please don't. All right, I'll go. Come on, let's go. We'll have a great time, huh?
I don't want to go now.
My mother told me there'd be moments like this. We ain't going.
Quit the kidding, Riley. Come on.
No, we ain't going. Go celebrate our anniversary yourself. What, Dumplin'? Are you still crying? Oh, please don't cry. I can't stand to see your eyeballs leaking like that.
I'm not crying, but you were rude and you yelled at me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dumplin', but we're still going to celebrate. I went out to Green Speckles Delicatessen and practically bought out the store. Look what I got. Look, one whole liverwurst sandwich, a bottle of lemon soda, and two straws.
Oh, but Chester, you didn't have any money, and he said he wouldn't give us any more credit.
Oh, well, I gave him security, my suspenders.
Suspenders? Well, they're no security.
They are for my pants. Now, eat the sandwich. Go on.
You take half.
No, I ate already. Honest. Green Speckle was in the back of the store arguing with a customer, and while they were quibbling, I was nibbling. Drink some of this lemon soda. Remember I once promised you on our first anniversary we'd be drinking champagne?
Yes, I remember.
Well, if they made champagne out of lemons, this would be it. Here, drink. I want to make a toast.
A toast?
Yeah, it's about you. I made it up while I was waiting in the delicatessen. A toast. Here's to you, my darling wife. There ain't a girl that's sweeter. You'll always be my shining light. So who needs a quarter for the meter?
Chester.
Huh?
Do you love me?
Well, Peg, how can you ask me that? Of course I love you.
And you'd do anything for me?
Anything, Dumplin'. Anything. Just name it.
Let me go back to working for Sidney.
Name something else.
But, Chester...
Now, listen, Peg, I will not have my wife...
It's just as I thought. You don't love me.
Well, what's that got to do with it? And anyway, how do you know you can get the job?
Sidney said he's got a place for a secretary.
Yeah, I know the place. His lap.
Oh, so that's what you think of me. You don't trust
me. Well, no, Dumplin', I do trust you.
Okay,
you can take the job.
Oh, thank you, darling.
I'll let you work all day for Sidney if that'll make you happy. But remember, when you come home to me, your happiness is over.
Theo will bring you the second act of The Life of Riley in just a moment.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
And now back to The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. We left Mrs. Riley telling a young friend of theirs how jealously Riley acted when she went back to her old job after 1 year of marriage. It seems that Peg worked for a former suitor of hers.
So you can see, Mr. Morgan, Riley was terribly jealous of Sidney Monahan, even before I went back to work.
Well, I guess I'd be too.
Well, to make matters worse, Riley and I worked in different departments, so we hardly ever saw each other. But one day, Riley arranged to go for lunch at the same hour that I did. He was outside my office waiting for me.
Hey, Riley, what are you doing up here in the office?
Oh, hello, Gillis. I'm waiting for my wife. I switched my lunch hour so as we could eat together.
Oh, swell. I'll see you over at Greasy Gertie's.
Ah, no, sir. None of them 15-cent blue plates for her.
Ah, this is something special, huh?
Yeah, I've been saving up. I'm taking her to Wing Ching House Chinese Gardens. Today they're serving their Hong Kong specialty, Yankee pot roast.
Hey, your wife's back working for young Monahan, ain't she?
Yeah, private secretary.
I hear how this here Monahan is a terrific sheik.
Yeah, how do you know, Gillis?
Well, every time I go out with a babe from the office here, she always slaps my face and says, "You're as bad as Sidney Monahan." You know, if it was my missus locked up 8 hours
Listen,
a day...
Listen, with... Gillis, I trust my wife.
Okay, don't get excited. I'm just making some insolent conversation. Say, how come she ain't come out yet? It's after one.
Oh, don't worry, she'll be here. She's probably just finishing some work. Peg wouldn't stand me up.
Well, I'll be going now, Sidney. I have a lunch date with Chester.
Okay, Peggy. Hey, now I've been thinking. My father needs a man inside here to handle the furniture in the showroom. The job pays more, too. Maybe I could fix it for Riley.
Oh, Sidney, that'd be wonderful.
Well, listen, my father's home today. Let's run out there and ask him. He thinks a lot of you, too, Peggy.
Well, I'll have to tell Chester I'm going.
Well, why not surprise him? If my father doesn't give him the job, he'd be disappointed.
Yes, that's right. Well, oh, Chester will forgive me. All right, let's go.
Come on. Out the back door.
Take me out to the ball game, Tank. Well, Riley, are you still here?
Yeah. Peg ain't come out yet.
Listen, it's almost 2 p.m. o'clock. That slave driver ain't got no right making your little wife wait past her lunch hour. Go in there and tell her to come out.
No, that's against the rules. I'm only a shipping clerk. The only time they let a shipping clerk come into the office was once last year when the boss needed a blood transfusion.
No one knocking the door. You afraid?
Who's afraid?
Knock louder.
No answer.
Kind of engrossed in their wake, ain't they?
Yeah. I don't like this. I'm going in there and disengross them.
Hey, how long do you think you...
Hey, they ain't here.
Boy, this is a nifty office. Look at that view you get from this window. Hey, Riley, come here, quick.
What's the matter?
That car coming in the front gate.
It's Monahan's. And Peg, she's with him.
That rat took your wife to lunch. She stood you up for him.
No. No, Peg wouldn't do that to me. Maybe it was just business.
Don't be a sap, Riley. They're pulling the wool off your eyes. This is the way it starts.
What starts?
First, he takes her to lunch. Then he takes her to tea dances. Then steak dinners. And then midnight snacks with lobster thermostat.
The beast wrecking my home.
Oh, Skinny, you're...
Listen, Stem.
We're trapped.
Quick, let's duck behind these filing cases.
Oh, Riley, I think...
Shh, quiet.
Oh, look, Sidney. We left in such a hurry you forgot to close the door to the ball.
Oh, so I did.
Oh, my. Look at the clock. We've been gone a long time.
Well, who cares? It was worth it, wasn't it?
I'll say it was.
Gillis, what was worth it?
Boy, I can hardly wait to see the look on Riley's face when I tell him he's through in that shipping room.
He's firing me.
Oh, it's wonderful of you to do this for me, Sidney.
Riley, she's stabbing you in the back.
The same back she scratched for me when I had the hives.
You know what, Sidney? Now I'm going to quit work.
Of course. You can take life easy from now on, Peggy.
Who'll support her?
Don't you get it, Riley? He's going to marry her.
If he tries it, I'll make him pay me alimony.
Oh, you've been so sweet about everything. Oh, Sidney, I could just kiss you.
Well, if you insist, I don't mind.
Oh, you don't. How will I do?
Chester!
Riley!
Chester, you've been eavesdropping.
That's all right, Peg. I ain't blaming you.
Monahan, put up your dukes.
Take it easy, Riley.
I'm coming at you, Monahan.
No, Riley, wait.
Oh, my jaw. He's using brass knuckles.
You ran into my elbow. Now, you get up off the floor and listen to me.
I listened enough. I won't stand in your way. I'll go.
Oh, wait, you big dope. We were
Don't try to stop me.
But we...
I'm walking out and I'm never coming back.
But we...
Goodbye forever.
Holy smoke, he locked himself in the vault.
Oh, Sidney, quick, you'll suffocate in there. I'll open it.
I can't. Only my father knows the combination.
Help, fire, police, fire.
Oh, where am I?
Steady, old man. Steady. You're in good hands.
Who's that?
It is I, Digby O'Dell, the friendly undertaker.
Oh, Digger, what are you doing here?
I've been working over you for the last half hour. Now just lie there. I happened to be here in the showroom when they carried you in.
Well, what happened?
You passed out and I brought you to. Frankly, it's a little out of my line.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. I shut myself up in a vault.
You shut yourself in a vault? Wait till my colleagues hear about this one.
Listen, Digger, where's Peg?
In the next room, having hysterics. But don't worry. The doctor is there.
Oh, poor Peg. Digger, I'm in an awful jam. It all started with our wedding anniversary.
Ah, wedding anniversary. The first anniversary. The honeymoon isn't over. The flame of love burns brightly. The 10th anniversary. They're getting on each other's nerves. But the fire of love can still be rekindled. And then the 20th anniversary. The fire is full of clinkers. I adore anniversaries. They're so gay.
Well, mine wasn't. Now Peg's leaving me. Maybe if I had a better job, she'd come back.
A job? Yeah. Why not come and work for me? I need someone to help me carry the burden.
No. You've got enough people working for you, Dick.
Oh, nonsense. In my profession, we have a saying. There's always room for one more at the bottom.
Thanks, Digger, but I...
Chester! Oh, Chester!
Peg!
Oh, Chester, darling, are you all right? Well,
Peg, you're kissing me. You're still hysterical.
Oh, you big baby. You still love me?
Love you? Why, Peg, I'd die for you.
Well, then I'll see you later. Here you, O'Reilly. I'd better be shoveling off.
But, Peg, I don't get it. You thank Sidney for firing me.
Firing you?
Yeah.
He's transferring you to a better job.
He is? Oh, that's great. Gee, Sidney's lovable. And don't you worry, Dumplin'. I learned my lesson. I ain't jealous of Sidney no more. You can go right on working for him for the rest of your life.
No, I quit. You see, I've been feeling kind of funny lately, and the doctor said...
The doctor's right. Dumplin'. I'm a brute. Letting my little wife work. From now on, I'll support the two of us.
Three of us, Chester.
Well, Peg, you're still dizzy. One of one makes two.
Can't you guess what I'm trying to tell you? Soon there'll be a third person coming to live with us.
Peg, you mean...
Nothing doing. Monahan ain't moving in with us.
Oh, Chester, can't you... I'm going to have a baby.
A baby? A human baby?
Oh, yes, Chester.
Well, wait, Peg. Darling, sweetheart. You mean we're going to have a baby? Our very own?
Yes, Chester. And I know he's going to look just like you.
What a revolting development this is. A baby. I got to get a doctor.
Quick, everybody, call the baby. My wife's going to have a doctor.
Oh, Quick. Chester, stop!
Peggy, darling, let me carry you.
Carry me? Where?
Well, to the hospital.
Oh, Chester, not yet. Not until April.
April? Well, I'll get you a calendar so it don't slip your mind. Peggy, let's go out and celebrate. I'll borrow some dough and we'll have three steaks.
Oh, Chester, I can't eat more than one.
Well, I can. In fact, it's my duty to keep up my strength. After all, now I'm eating for two.
We'll be back in half a minute.
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Oh, well, that's about the whole story, Mr. Morgan. You can see how Riley managed...
I got the coax! Bill... Did Peg tell you how neat I handled the situation about her working?
Yes, she did. And it certainly taught me a lesson. I'm going to make things up with Jenny right away.
That's it, Bill. Get married. It's the only thing for a man to do. You may not believe this, Bill, but statistics prove that out of 110 million married people, almost half of them are men.
Gamble, makers of Teal, the amazing liquid dentifrice, invites you to meet our guests next week. You hear The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. Read how William Bendix leads The Life of Riley in The Woman magazine on your newsstands now. The Life of Riley is produced for Teal by Irving Brecker and is directed by Don Bernard. This is Ken Carpenter on behalf of Teal, inviting you to listen again next week. And remember, for laughs, it's R-I-L-E-Y, Riley. And for lovely smiles, it's T-E-E-L, Teal.
From September of 1946, it's been William Bendix starring in The Life of Riley and An Expert in Marriage. In a moment, Gangbusters with The Case of the Quincy Killers. Gangbusters grew out of an earlier show called G-Men, which was first heard on NBC for Chevrolet in 1935. This best remembered of all police programs came about in the summer of 35 when Phillips H. Lord talked to NBC about developing a thoroughly authoritative pilot series about the government's war against crime. Lord sold the idea to Chevrolet, then went to Washington, D.C. to gather the official blessing of J. Edgar Hoover, then the head of the FBI. The Clues element became the most successful aspect of the program. After each play, nationwide alarms were broadcast for actual criminals wanted by police or FBI agents. Fine details of the criminal's appearance helped capture over 110 men in the first 3 years of the program. In 1948, Gangbusters switched to CBS, where it continued on Saturdays until 1953, and then was last heard on Mutual in the 1955-57 season. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with Gangbusters and The Case of the Quincy Killers from September of 1949. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Now, Gangbusters, presented in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States. The only national program that brings you authentic police case histories.
Tonight, Gangbusters presents The Case of the Quincy Killers. Who didn't know that a railroad ticket in the hands of alert detectives could be a one-way ticket to the gallows?
Gangbusters has asked the Honorable Peter F. Hartman, former Chief of Police, Quincy, Illinois, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. Now, Chief Hartman, before we begin, I'd like to remind our listeners about a special feature at the end of tonight's program. It shows how a girl of 12 and a boy of 14 helped capture a dangerous kidnapper.
I'm quite anxious to hear that myself, Don Gardner.
Well, Chief Hartman, let's get to tonight's case.
Well, Don, it's not very often that a situation such as this arises in society. I've been a police officer myself for 23 years, and this was the first time I ever ran into anything like this case.
Why don't you start right in, Chief Hartman?
All right, Don. Let's begin in the city of Quincy, Illinois, one spring evening a few years ago. In a small two-story frame house near the International Shoe Company factory, a man sat on the living room sofa. He was there calling on Mrs. Angela Brooks Stover, already twice widowed. Angela was seated at the old melodeon, and the music coming forth seemed to be a hymn.
Left for me.
Angie.
What?
Don't you know anything except church music?
It's music, isn't it? I learned it when I was a child, and I've never learned nothing since.
Well, you ain't a child now.
My husband's like my playing. Both of them.
Is that what killed them?
Will Heinze. I'm never going to invite you back for another evening.
Don't then.
Will.
Huh?
I baked a cake this afternoon.
What kind of cake?
Chocolate. With white inside.
Well, let's have some.
You know, I baked every day for both my husbands.
Is that so?
Every day.
Now, look, Angie, you're not hooking me for number three, so if you're going to make hints, good night.
Will, what's the matter with us getting married? Is there something about me you don't like?
No, Angie, it ain't that.
But... certainly time he was getting married.
Well, it's my father. There'd be nobody to look after him.
Since when's he sick in bed? Look after himself. It's you that's clinging to him.
Now, wait a minute. I can take care of myself.
If you didn't have that old goat to drag around with you, maybe you'd get someplace in this world.
Pop is plenty smart. He's smart enough for me to listen to.
You're just scared of him, that's all. Like any minute he was going to take you out in the woodshed. Like you were still running around in knee pants.
That ain't so, Angie. You got more company?
No.
Who are you expecting?
Nobody. I don't think anybody.
Well, don't stand there. See who it is.
All right. Yes, what? Oh, Mr. Heinze.
Yes, Mr. Heinze.
Will, it's your father.
I guess Will knows me when he sees me.
But won't you come in, Mr. Heinze? I was just about to serve chocolate cake.
Well, I like chocolate cake. If it's good. Will, I want to talk to you.
Angie makes good chocolate cake. Huh?
The best. And I got some coffee up.
Well, then go get it. Don't stand here talking about it.
The eating is the proof of the pudding.
All right. Make yourself at home, Mr. Heidegger.
I will.
Well, what's the matter, Pop?
Well, if I was a younger man, I'd take a stick and pound some sense into your head. Sit down.
Oh, Pop, I don't really mean to marry Angie.
Angie, huh? There was two policemen around the house looking for you. They said Klinger's hardware store was broken into, and they think you did it. Now, did you?
Pop,
I... Did you?
Well, yeah.
All these years I've been teaching you, all these years I've been trying to make a man out of you.
I'm sorry,
Too late to be sorry. Got no respect for your father. Why don't you at least wait until I'm in my grave?
Pop, don't talk like
Breaking
that.
Breaking into hardware stores. How many times have I got to tell you not to break into anything? Unless I say so.
It looks so easy.
It looks so easy. Now you're in trouble. Every time we got in trouble, every time it's been on account of you running off and doing something like that.
Pop.
If it hadn't been for you, we wouldn't have spent that time in the Missouri State Prison. Not 5 years in Iowa. You're not much better than a child.
Pop, I told you I was sorry.
Being sorry is not going to chase them two detectives away from the house there. They're waiting for you.
Uh-oh.
I tell you, it's lucky for you your father has a good mouth on him. I told them I'd go out and find you, bring you to the police station.
Well, no, Pop, you're not.
Well, I sure ought to.
Yeah, but you ain't, Pop.
It's just lucky, Will, that you're my flesh and blood. Just lucky for you.
What are we going to do, Pop?
Now, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to do some traveling again. To a resort. To Spirit Lake.
Spirit Lake? Where's that?
It's up in Iowa near the Minnesota line. I saw an ad in the paper. The people that runs the cottages there need a couple of handymen.
Handymen? We're not going to work, Pop.
Just long enough to get a good look around the resort. No, we leave tonight.
Spend all day chopping wood just so somebody can burn it up.
Bill.
Fine job we got.
Bill?
What, Pop?
Put that axe up, Will. The smeller says dinner's on the table.
It's about time. Where have you been all day?
What's eating you, Will? A little work never hurt nobody.
It can't hurt you. You never do anything.
Will, you have some respect.
Well, I thought you said we'd only be around here long enough to find out where they keep their money. I thought you
don't think so much. Come on inside.
You know, the first guests will be coming soon, Pop. When the cottages get rented up, it'll be tougher and tougher to do what we gotta do.
You just leave all that to me. I'll tell you when.
We can handle the millers, all right. They won't be no trouble.
Wipe your feet off.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
okay.
Bill, yeah. Come in. It's on the table.
Thank you, Mrs. Miller.
We got lamb stew. It's getting cold.
Ah, lamb stew sounds pretty good, don't it, Pop?
Yeah, it's awful good. Don't you think you ought to wash your hands, Will?
Oh, yeah, Pop. Hey, excuse me. I'll be right back.
Yeah, sit down, Pop.
Thank you, Mrs. Miller.
Sometimes Will calls you Pop as if you were really his Pop.
Well, I guess it's natural him not having a father and a together so long. My, everything sure looks good.
And help yourself.
Ain't Mr. Miller going to eat with us?
Oh, Mr. Miller went to town. He went to arrange for the bus. First guests are coming tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Well, that's... kind of early, ain't it? Nights are still pretty cold for vacationing.
Oh, we get lots of early guests. Oh, now take some more of that stew, Pop. That little bit isn't going to hold you till supper.
Well, I'm all washed up.
There, sit down, Will. Oh, and help yourself.
Thanks, Miss Miller. Oh, that lamb stew looks awful good.
It is good, Will. Will, the, first guests are arriving tomorrow.
Oh, no kidding.
That's right. We're in for some real excitement.
Yeah, I guess we are.
Oh, that must be Mr. Miller calling from town. Excuse me, I'll get it. Help yourself to everything. Don't be bashful.
Say, this lamb stew is good, Pop.
Hang the lamb stew.
Well, it's good. Mrs. Miller's a good cook.
Guests coming early ruin everything.
What can we do about it? They're coming.
I tell you what we can do. We can finish our business tonight.
Tonight?
That's what I said.
Yeah, but we don't know where Mr. Miller keeps all the money.
We'll find it.
But how are we going to have time to find it with them around?
That's easy. We kill him.
Kill him?
Yeah.
Oh, now, Pop, that ain't good.
Now, you look here. Did I ever put you wrong yet, Will? The only times we've been in trouble is when you did something on your own. That's the only times.
Yeah, but do we have to kill him?
If we're going to find out what we want, yes.
When?
Tonight. After supper. In the parlor.
But, Pop...
Will, I made up my mind.
Okay, if you made up your mind.
You're right, Will. Mrs. Miller does make good lamb stew. Very good lamb stew.
So, Don, if the afternoon seemed like an eternity to Philip and William Heinze as they waited their moment, the events that night must have seemed to occur in a split second. But sometimes split seconds are remembered better than eternities by murderers and their pursuers.
Now, back to Gangbusters. You were telling us, Chief Hartman, that the criminals Philip and William Heinze, father and son, planned to murder and rob their employers, Mr. and Mrs. Miller, operators of a lakeside resort in northern Iowa.
That's right, Don. And that night after supper, the two criminals were in the kitchen about to enter the parlor where, as usual, they were invited by the Millers to spend the evening.
Do like I told you and we'll come out all right.
Oh, but, Pop, do we have to kill them?
I told you we did. You just watch me for signal. Good evening, Mrs. Miller.
Oh,
Miller.
Good evening. Have a chair.
Thank you. We will.
How did it go in town today, Mr. Miller?
Fine, Will. Just fine.
Are you finished with the sports section, Mr. Miller?
Yes, sir. It is on the couch.
Oh, thank you.
Big rainstorm in Chicago, it says.
Is that so, Mr. Miller?
Yes, it... Oh, where'd you get that gun?
I'm going to use it to kill you, Mr. Miller.
What? No! But you old fool!
Take care of her.
Oh, you maniac!
Take care of her, I said.
You crazy boy!
Quiet! Hit her again. Yeah, now here, shoot her.
Oh, no, Pop, you do it.
Do I have to do everything? All your life I've been doing things for you. Now here, you shoot her yourself. Go on, shoot her.
Pop.
I said shoot her.
And she might still be lying out there, her unconscious and Mr. Miller's body, if the bus driver hadn't come by with the guests.
I think we've got a case, Sheriff.
Well, this is Cousin's furniture store here. Oh, before we go in, besides being the leading furniture merchant and undertaker, Mr. Cousins is also coroner of the county. He'll probably want to talk to us about holding the inquest.
I understand.
Well, let's go on in. Afternoon, John. Afternoon, Sheriff. Mr. John Cousins, this is Agent Ike Welburn of the Iowa Bureau of Investigation. He came out from Des Moines to help with the case.
Ah, glad to have you. We got a mystery on our hands. Sit down here any place. It's all second hand stuff.
Thanks. I hope I can help you solve that mystery.
Well, corpus delicti is back in the undertaking department. How's Mrs. Miller?
Well, the doctors give her a 50-50 chance, John.
Mm.
We got the slugs out of Mr. Miller's body. Looks like they came out of a .32.
Both of them. We'll send them down to the laboratory in Des Moines for a complete ballistics check. What about these two men, the suspects?
Well, the only time they were seen in town was the day they got off the train.
When was that?
Oh, 10 days, 2 weeks ago. They asked Chet North, the station agent, for directions to the Miller's place. Chet phoned out, and Miller drove in for him.
Yes, Mrs. Miller could give you more information about them than anyone else.
Well, apparently Mrs. Miller won't be able to give that information for a while.
If at all.
If they'd already been hired by the Millers, must have been some correspondence between them.
Well, my men certainly couldn't find anything. No payroll book, nothing.
Nothing at all.
You know, it's strange how the young one and the old one seem to travel together. Mr. Miller was talking about them at the feed store one day. He had an idea they were some kin, but he never asked.
Wasn't the nosy kind, as long as they did their work.
They did their work, all right. Come on, Sheriff, let's walk over to the depot and talk to that station agent. I want to see if certain of the exact day they got off the train.
learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Now back to Gangbusters.
Gangbusters has asked the Honorable Peter F. Hartman, former Chief of Police, Quincy, Illinois, to narrate by proxy tonight's case. Well, Chief Hartman, let's get to tonight's case.
Just a minute. Yes? Who is it?
It's me, Angie. Will.
Will? Will, where have you been? Where'd you disappear to for 3 weeks?
Oh, Pop decided we should take a little trip.
And you go away without telling me.
Well, ain't you going to invite me in?
Come in, Will.
Much obliged, Angie.
Now, tell me. Was that nice, what you did to me?
No, Angie, it wasn't, Angie.
I don't know whether I even ought to ask you to stay.
Angie, I'm through listening to my pop.
Oh.
I'm going to start doing things on my own.
It's about time.
More than about time.
Will, just by coincidence, I made a chocolate cake today.
You did?
Would you like some?
Later. But right now, would you play one of those hymns for me?
A hymn?
Yeah.
Well, sure, Will. If you want.
Angie.
Yes?
Sometime in the near future, would you care to marry me?
Oh, Will. I don't know what to say.
Say what you said to the two before me. Say yes.
Yes, Will. Yes. Oh, come to the church in the wildwood.
Oh. Come to the church
in the veil. One of these phones would be best to put the call through on, Sheriff.
Yeah, you can tie this one up as long as you want, Welburn.
Thanks.
Yes, please.
Operator, I want to place a call to the Chief Auditor, Rock Island Railroad, Chicago, Illinois.
Yes, sir. I'll call you back.
Thanks.
It looks pretty hopeless to me, Welburn. The railroad takes up thousands of tickets every day.
I know they do, but each one of them is handled and audited individually. Now, if we can trace the ones these two men used for their passage to Spirit Lake, we might know where they came from. That's a big step in the investigation.
No, I grant you that, but suppose they change trains at Des Moines or someplace. Then where are we?
If they bought their tickets through to Spirit Lake when they left home, it doesn't make any difference how many times they change. The stamp of the originating office is on the back. If the railroad can locate those tickets, we've got a chance.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe you've got something.
Sheriff, it's all we've got.
Where have you been, Will? You had me worried. The Quincy cops might still be looking for you on account of that hardware store.
Just over to see Angie.
But I thought I told you to stay away from her. She's been widowed twice and proposes to make you number three.
I asked her to marry me, Pop.
You what?
Angie and I are going to get married.
You won't marry her as long as I'm alive.
I ain't listening to you no more, Pop. You got me in trouble all my life listening to you. Steal this, steal
you
that.
Will?
Turn me loose, Pop.
You're my boy. You'll do what I say.
Turn me loose.
Will. Of course, your poor old father, who's been nothing but good to you all your life.
Good to me? That's a laugh. Making me spend years and years in jail, making me steal and kill.
You wouldn't have known what to do if it weren't for me. You wouldn't have known nothing.
I wouldn't have killed nobody.
You didn't even do a good job at that. I told you to kill her. You messed it up. You never did anything right.
I can't kill, Pop, if I want to. Angie and me are getting married, and if you step 1 foot in the way, I'll kill you. I swear I'll kill you.
Agent Welburn.
Wellborn, Detective Watson, the Quincy, Illinois Police Department is ready to talk now.
Well, good. Put him on.
Hello, Wellborn.
Yes, Watson. How are you?
Okay. I'm thinking about our phone conversation last night.
Any ideas, Watson?
You say those two definitely bought their railroad tickets here in Quincy.
That's what the railroad says.
Well, I don't want to make any promises, Wellborn. Maybe I know the men you're looking for. Father and a son.
That could be.
The name's Heinze. Suspected them at a couple of burglaries around here. They disappeared about 3 weeks ago. But I could start checking around for them.
It's a good idea, Watson. You start checking and I'll start driving. And I'll see you there as quick as I can make it.
Come to the church in the vale. No place is so dear to my child.
I never heard such pretty music. Pop.
Evening, Mr. Hines.
You get your hat, Will. We're going.
How did you get in here?
I got a knack of getting places, Will. You know that. You get your hat.
Go on, Angie. Finish playing.
But Will, I...
Finish playing.
Will, tell him to go home. I can't stand the sight of
him. You're coming with me, Will.
No more. You're not telling me what to do.
Will.
You stupid old
fire. Stay away from me, Pop.
Will.
Put that gun up.
Stay away, and you too, Angie.
Oh, Will.
Shut up, Angie. All these years, I've been taking lessons from you, Pop. So right now, I'm going to show you what I learned.
Well, you wouldn't shoot your own father now. Not after all we've been to each other.
You've never been anything to me. All my life, I've been scared of you. Now I'm not scared no more.
Will, don't
shoot
him.
You get some sense, boy.
I'm just beginning to get some sense, boy. Sit down, Pop. I'm going to shoot you just like you shot Mr. Miller.
Will, my boy.
Sit down.
Will, don't do this, please.
Hey.
Police officers, don't move.
Yeah, well,
don't move. I have a dozen guns on you.
Oh, Will.
You lady, open the door.
Don't do it, Angie.
Open the door.
All right.
One side. That's it. Just keep your hands up.
Hey, he's my son, officer. We were only joking.
I wasn't either joking.
If there's any humor in this situation, it's beyond me. And you won't think it's so funny either when you face the judge and the jury.
That, Don, was how this strange pair of killers, father and son, were apprehended. They were returned to Iowa, where they were found guilty of murder in the first degree. On March 29th, 1946, Philip and William Heinze paid the extreme penalty for their crime on the gallows at Fort Madison State Penitentiary.
Well, thank you, Chief Hartman, for this most unusual case history. And gangbusters, congratulations to all the police officers whose brilliant investigation brought this pair to justice. Now, as a special feature, Gangbusters presents an interview with the two young listeners who are responsible for the apprehension of the dangerous kidnapper, John Harvey Bug, whom they recognize from the description given on a Gangbusters clue. Here they are from the studios of KEX, ABC's new 50,000-watt outlet in Portland, Oregon.
Hello, I'm Pauline Virgin, age 12. I'm a Girl Scout.
And I'm Navar Smith, 14, Andy Boy Scout.
Well, Pauline and Navar, you've had quite an exciting week. And now you're on Gangbusters. Why don't you just go ahead and tell all these millions of people just how it happened?
All right, Mr. Hunter. You see, we live in Gerhardt, Oregon. And everybody.
Gerhardt's about 80 miles from Portland, isn't that right, Pauline?
Yes, sir. Well, you see, I took riding lessons from Cowboy Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday night when I was listening to Gangbusters, I heard the description of him. And it said that he had the limp and the tape on his fingers.
What was the description that they gave in Gangbusters? Did they say he had his fingers taped?
Yes, he did.
Oh, I see. And then this Cowboy Jim had his fingers taped, too. Mm-hmm. Well, you were pretty suspicious then, weren't you?
Yes, I was.
Well, what did you do about it?
Well, I told my cousin Navar.
Oh, I see. Navar, how did you feel about this whole thing?
Well, I thought if the FBI wanted this kidnapper, that the best thing to do was to turn him in. I went over to Seaside and turned him in to the policeman there.
You turned the kidnapper in?
No, I asked him where I could get in touch with the FBI, but...
Oh, I see.
He asked me why, and I told him, and so he says that he would do it for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you talk to your mother about it, Pauline, at all?
Yes, I did, and she kind of laughed.
Well, you didn't let that bother you at all, though, did you?
No.
Well, you say the policeman now was going to do what for you?
He was going to turn him into the FBI for us.
Well, I see, and he certainly did from all the activity we've seen around here in the last week. Agents of the Federal Bureau of Investigation did some checking, and they found out that Cowboy Jim really was the kidnapper, John Harvey Bug. And they found him hiding under the baby crib in a friend's house last Friday night. Tell me something, Pauline. What did your mother say after it was all over?
Well, she was kind of thrilled about it. She didn't think it could happen.
Well, she kind of admitted, too, that kids can be right sometimes,
yeah.
Didn't she? Well, you and Navar certainly were right, and observant, too. Now, on behalf of Gangbusters, I want to present each of you with a check for $100.
Oh, boy.
And we hope you'll continue to be observant young citizens.
Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Thank you.
Now, this is Ben Hunter, transcribed from the studios of KEX Portland, Oregon, switching you back to Gangbusters in New York.
Thank you, Pauline Virgin and Navarre Smith. And Gangbusters, congratulations to both of you. Tonight's case was dramatized by Stanley Niss and directed by Ted Corday, with Bill Smith and Bill Zuckert in leading roles. Don Gardner speaking.
From September 27th of 1949, it's been Gangbusters and the Case of the Quincy Killers. Well, that's all the time we have on today's program, but join us again next week and invite a friend to listen and enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. The comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.